It makes me look smarter.
Okay.
I don't know if I'd be able to do it when I'm preaching. They'd probably go flying everywhere. But we'll be looking this morning in 1 John, the second chapter, verses 15 through 17. I just want to tell you how much I love you, Terry. It is awesome to be able to stand before a group of people who have been there, done that, and knows what God has done for them. And Terry is just of one that God has changed their life. And one of the things that we're going through in 1 John is the realization that we can't just say, well, he's changed my life, I'm good, and walk away from God. It is a consistent walk with God that we must have. Part of the reason why Terry and so many others got trapped in things that they destroyed their lives and had to go to God was the fact that this world is so powerful. It makes you want the things of this world because it's really the only things that we can tangibly see and touch in it. But what happens with an addiction or whatever it is in life that causes you to go away from God is that you begin to love that thing of the world more than you love God. And it doesn't have to be something as terrible as drugs or alcohol. It can be something much simpler than that. Something that doesn't sound like on the surface is not that big of a deal. But you can love it more than God and it becomes a big deal. So this morning we'll be talking about another test to see if you're in fellowship. Let me make sure that you understand what I'm talking about. There is a relationship is different than being in fellowship with God. I have a relationship with God. My relationship is that I'm a saved child of God. I am His child and that can never change. Now, it doesn't mean that I can be in fellowship with Him. Being in fellowship with God means that we hang out together, we talk, and we're good. Okay? Not all kids grow up having that kind of relationship with their dad or their mom. Sometimes their relationship is torn to a point where there is no fellowship at all. So he's talking about a test of fellowship, not relationship. You can be in the world and be saved, but you cannot be loving the world and be in fellowship with Him and be good with God. I heard that from Terry enough back in the day. Me and God's good. How silly that sounds now, though, isn't it? But for the moment, you believed it. And I believe there are many of us in here that are faced with that lack of fellowship with God. We're out walking in the sins of the world, and we're saying we're good with God, but they're not. The world. Now, some in our generation, I don't know if Terry ever listened to this kind of music or not. Remember the 1977 pop hit, Torn Between Two Lovers. Some of y'all going, yeah, I remember that. Well, y'all old folk. It was sung by Mary McGregor. It spoke about a lady who is attracted to two men at the same time. What part of the lyrics goes this way? It doesn't mean I love you less, but there's just this empty place inside of me that only He can fill. And that, now look, not all the songs of the 70s had great lyrics, okay? Not all of them were true. But it leads us to the question of this. Can we love two things equally at the same time? Not when it comes to God and the world. The first thing we want to look at this morning is found in verse 15. About loving the world. Be not loving the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone might be loving the world, the love of the Father is not in him. What is meant by the world? Now, we live in the world. We live on the planet Earth. We live, we can't deny that, we have to be here or not. Does this mean that we're not to appreciate the beauty and the splendor and the resources of this earth and the heavens? No, I think the Bible explicitly tells us to admire and wonder about the beauty of this world that He created. We live of the earth, and God has given us the earth and heavens to live and appreciate and enjoy. So what is He talking about with the world? Well, the world means two things. It means that the earth and heaven are passing away. Contrary to popular belief, we are not evolving into utopia. Things have been going downhill since the Garden of Eden. It has. It started as a perfect earth, and now it's deteriorating. How many of y'all gotten in better shape as you've gotten older? Just saying. Okay, Zach, put your hand down. No, you know what I mean. I was in much better shape when I was at 20 years old than I am at 59. I am much better off. Was much better off at 20. There was less of me then. You see what I'm saying? Time and a whole bunch of other things, but particularly one thing, sin, is causing things to deteriorate. The world is corruptible and will eventually be destroyed. It cannot survive, just as these bodies will not survive. One day there will be an end. Therefore, believers must not become attached to the world. You're on a sinking ship. The things that we think are so important today are things that will not last. That car you drive, how many of y'all remember your first new car? The first time you drove it off the lot and you think, is it new still? Do you still have it? Did it break down on you? Is it in a garbage? Is it someplace in a junkyard someplace? You see, nothing is going to last. And when we become attached to the things of this world, we will understand that it will not last. That new something or other that you just want and to have will no longer be new. It will break. I had some really cool toys when I was growing up, but I don't have them no more. I could give them to my grandkids. But I don't have them no more. You know why? Because they broke. They disintegrated. They're gone. And on and on and on. We become attached to things that are not permanent. And the world is not permanent. Believers are not to love the world so much that they desire to stay here more than they desire to be in God and in heaven. The things that I have earned and look forward to in heaven will be there forever and will not pass away. There is a difference. The world is a system also of man-made governments and societies. Some good, some bad, but none perfect. That's what it's talking about with the world. It's a system itself. The world means a system of sin, of lust, and evil, and pride, and rebellion against God. So when we say the world, we're talking about the things that are not of God that are infesting this world today. The world is full of sinful people. People who are evil, full of lust and pride. People who are in rebellion against God. Just turn the news on today. Listen to what happened yesterday and last night and tell me that the world, this system, is not evil. That there are people in this world who just gets a gun and just blows people away for the fun of it. That's evil. That's part of this world and the culture of this world. A person is not to love this world, the possessions and the pleasures of it. He is to love God. And how can a person love God and love the evilness of the world at the same time? You can't. We can't. So what does it mean that the love of the Father is not in him? If we love this world, he says the love of the Father is not in him. It doesn't mean that he's not saved if he loves the world. There'd be a lot of folks who would just be disqualified from being saved if that was the case. But that the love that God has for us, we cannot show the world that kind of love. He wants us to show the kind of love that he wants for us. Remember the kind of love I talked about? A love that is based on evaluation and choice. A matter of will and action. The world, when you do something good, it praises you. When you do something bad, it destroys you. What did God do? When you do something bad, he gives you mercy. He makes a choice to love you. That's the kind of love that if you're in the world and you love the world, you won't have that kind of love anymore. You won't be showing that kind of love, the love of God in your life. You're not making that decision. In John 3:19 it says, John 3:19 is, and this is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. God still loves us, but we make a choice to continue walking in darkness because we decided to love the things of the world instead of God. We left the fellowship of God to walk in the darkness of this world. You know what that means? When you make a decision, no one made you walk in the darkness. No one made you stop loving God. But what happened was the enticements of the world, you made a decision to go that direction, to walk in the dark, to participate in the world. And you know what that decision means? It means that you loved the darkness more than you loved the light. How can that be? Because, what did it say? Men love darkness rather than light. It's our nature. You see, leaving the fellowship of God, it's our fleshly nature, but not our spiritual nature. How could a saved child of God decide to walk in darkness? Because they are buying a lie that I can love both. That I can love God and love the things of this world at the same time. And it's a lie. Satan loves that particular one because it makes Christians ineffective. Ineffective Christians who are walking in darkness and no one pays attention to because they don't see the light of God living in their life. In verse 16, we're going to talk about the things, in a little more particular, the things of the world. In verse 16, it says this, "For each and everything in the world, the desire of the flesh, and the desire of the eyes, and the arrogance of life, it is not from the Father, but it is from the world." The man who loves the world, he's attached to the world more than he is to God. Now, the people that John is writing to is writing to church members. Okay? They have professed Christ, and yet John is having to warn them not to love the world. See, what happens is some begin to enjoy nature and the beauty of the earth so much that they don't
worship regularly. Well, I can worship just as well out in the deer woods, or I can fit worship just as well out there on the lake. I can enjoy God's nature and beauty. Well, that may be. But after a while, they begin to worship the nature and the beauty and not God. They forsake the worship of God and His study of His Word in order to be out in nature. Some become so involved in man's government and social organizations that they become more attached and faithful to them than they do God and His church. They'll say, but I'm doing a good job, a good thing over here. I belong to this organization, and I'm helping the kids over here and over here. And I'm telling you, there is only one organization deemed by God to carry out His gospel and His message to a lost and dying world, and that's the New Testament church. And if you're putting more effort and time into any other organization, then you are not loving God the way you need to love Him. You're loving the things of this world because they're of this world. And some become so hungry for the world and its things that they begin to bring, to return its pleasures and possessions. They just love this place. They love the things of this world. And what are the things of this world? Well, there are three sins of worldliness. And the first, there's the desire of the flesh. Now, what does that mean? Well, the flesh actually has to do with feeling, touching, tasting, hearing, and seeing. It's a set of desires and urges. For instance, right now, for some reason, Texas Roadhouse steak is in my head and I can't get it out. I'm desiring that. I can almost taste it. Now, I'm teasing with y'all right now, ain't I? But see, I want it. Now, if I dwell on it, I may actually have to cut my sermon short so I can go do it. Yeah, I said almost. Now, you see what I'm talking about? What is it that you desire? What is it that your senses become overloaded with? What is it that the urges that you have? Now, urges and desires are not necessarily wrong. God gave them to us. But they have to be controlled. Two questions you have to ask. Is it forbidden by God? No, He wants me to eat steak. Do these desires consume us? Am I wanting to eat it all the time and I can't stop? And if I answer these questions, is it forbidden by God? Yes, then I can't do it. I've got to control my desire. And what if, let's say that, I'm chewing gum all the time and I'm just chewing gum constantly over and over again till it becomes I have to attend a meeting for it. Let's just say that I can't live without chewing gum. Now, you replace that chewing gum with whatever it is in your life, okay, that's controlling you. And you see what I'm talking about? The gum itself is not a problem. It's that desire for it that you can't control the desire for. Then it becomes a problem. That is the desire of the flesh. Things like adultery. Yeah, I went from chewing gum to adultery. Lust. Hatred. Murders, drunkenness, revelings, which includes a whole lot of really terrible stuff. You see what I'm talking about? Things of this world that, on the surface, man, you think, well, that'd be fun. Of course, they're not. They're desires of the flesh. And then there is the lust of the eyes. The eyes have to do with seeing and wanting what one sees. I think you know where this is going. David went off of his balcony when he should have been at war with his army. He was out bored and he went off his balcony and he saw something with his eyes. And that turned into lust, it turned into desire. And he acted upon it. And it changed his entire life. because of that one sin. It led to murder. That's the lust of the eyes. Again, there's nothing wrong with desiring what we see. Seeing and desiring is normal. But it becomes wrong when these two things happen. If it's forbidden by God, then we need to stay away from it. Or do what we see consume us? You just can't turn your eyes away. And you just want to see more and more. Then it's wrong. The lust of the eyes for sex, all kinds of evil, things of other people. It could be that thing that someone else, your neighbor, has that you just desire and you just got to have. Maybe it's the pleasures of the world, drugs, alcohol, or maybe some other God in your life that you put before God, and it becomes more important than anything else in this world. You are loving this world and the things of this world more. There's one other thing it mentions. Typically, in most versions, it says the pride of life. I call it the arrogance of life. The pride of life, the arrogance of life, means self-centeredness. A man who's focused upon himself and wants people to notice him. It's a person whose mind and thoughts are primarily upon themselves. It's a person who seeks attention through their dress or their looks, their rank or wealth, or they seek honor, fame, power, position, luxury, something to outshine others. They seek importance in life. You know who I'm talking about. You know people like that. Maybe you're a little bit like that yourself, that it's all about you. They become so self-absorbed and self-centered. That's the pride of life. Or I've got it all. I want everybody to know how great I am. And then there's another part to that. The arrogance of life means self-sufficiency. A person who's focused upon himself and feels entirely capable of handling life himself. This is my life. I'm going to deal with life the way I want to, and I can handle it all. I don't need no one's help, especially someone like God. I don't need this because I can take care of myself. It's a person who feels that self-image, public image, ego, and personal strength are the basis of life. A person who feels little need for God because they've got it. They can take care of themselves. These things are not of God. These things are of the world. So how can we be in fellowship with God if we are loving these things more than we love Him? We can't, is the answer. In verse 17, it tells us a little bit about how we overcome the world. And the world and the craving of it is being made to pass away. But he which is doing the will of God is remaining forever. The things of this world will not last forever. Those people, men or women that you may have lusted after, may have caused you all kinds of issues past, guess what? They're not going to be here forever. That person you said you would love forever, well, they're maybe no longer in your life. Maybe those things in the world that you said, I just can't live without, maybe you're living without it now. Nothing is forever in this world. The world and its lust pass away the minute I die. For me. All these things that I think are so important in this world, the things that I want, the comforts, the things that I have looked at, the things that I have done, the things that I try to accumulate in life, they will all pass away. I will have no tie to them whatsoever anymore. And the same is for you. Whatever you think today is so important in this world is probably not in comparison with forever and eternity. It's just a temporary thing to make you happy for the moment. Every man leaves behind the world and all he has secured. He loses all the things that he's accumulated and enjoyed. He'll not be able to take a single pleasure or a single passion, possession with him when he leaves this world. Imagine, he can't take a single thing. He is gone from this world and there will be nothing that you take with you. The world and its lust will pass away at the end of the world. The world is to be destroyed by fire. That's a different kind of global warming. It's to be destroyed by fire. And a new heavens and new earth will be created by God, where only the righteous will dwell. And so the lost person has a choice. Someone who does know Christ. Do I accept the love of Christ into my life and I become a child of His forever? Am I going to have a saving relationship with Him? And will I decide to leave the spiritual darkness of this world and enter into a new relationship with Him so that I could have fellowship with Him? Because this world is not my home. This world, is everything in it will pass away, and so will I. So am I going to start looking to the future and worry about what's going to happen to me after this world is through? After I die, am I going to start concentrating more on the important things of life, which is what happens to me when I die, than I am what's on TV tonight? And will I leave the darkness and enter into a relationship with Him in the light? The saved person also has a choice. Do I live my life that is pleasing to my Heavenly Father by walking in the light or having fellowship with God? By doing the things of God in this world which last forever? Or will I pull away from God's fellowship by loving the world and the things of it? It comes down to a decision. You can talk all you want to about somebody making you do it or your circumstances, but every single opportunity you have in your life is to either love God or love the world. You make that decision. You see, the pull of the flesh, the eyes, and the pride of life, they're hard to deal with. No one here is going to tell you that it's easy. They're hard. But we live in sinful bodies, and the struggle is real. You become a Christian, and it doesn't mean that everything comes easy. Matter of fact, in some ways it becomes harder, because then you know better. And you have to make that decision to love God every day. See, it's not a matter of loving God whether it's a feeling or not. I just love God so much. That was a beautiful song. I love God. No, the love comes in the fact when you make that choice, that willful choice to say, I know what I'm feeling. I know what I want. I see the temptations of this world, but yet I make a choice to love God instead of these things. And you make that choice to follow God and not to participate in the worldly things. Let me give you an example of that. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. Well, I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault that it takes forever to find a way out. A little bit later on, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. And I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it wasn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. A little bit later, I walk down the same street, and there's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it there. I still fall in. It's just a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I'm at. It's my fault. And I get out immediately. A little later, I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. And then a little bit later, I decide I'm going to walk down another street. Do you see the decisions? It's a simple decision. Don't be anywhere near that hole. Put yourself in a place where you won't fall into the hole. Put yourself in positions where you'll love God more and more and not find yourself walking in the darkness of this world, desiring and craving this world and finding yourself in the same hole and predicament every time away from the fellowship of God. Just make the decision to follow Him. Every choice that you make, understand that you're making a choice. Am I going to love God, or am I going to love this world? And the more you love God, the more times that you make the choice that you're going to love God, the closer you'll be in fellowship with Him. And you won't want to be away from Him. So what is it with you this morning? What decision do you need to make? If you're here today and you've never accepted Jesus Christ into your heart and your life, then you need that relationship with Him. Because, you know, John says we're a sinner. And the price of that sin is death. Jesus paid that price. And all you have to do is accept His payment for your sin. And then what He does is He'll accept you as a child of God. He adopts you into His family. You inherit all the things of heaven because you're a child of God. And if you've never done that, you can never, ever, ever, ever have fellowship with God because you don't know Jesus. If you're here today, as I suspect many of you are, saved children of God, be not loving the world. Don't love the world. Love God. Make your decision. Can you imagine that every day when I come home, you know, I tell my wife, Terry, I love you. And then I go out that night, and I start loving on some other girls. And then I come back and say, but you know, I love you. How does that work? The answer is it doesn't. God wants us to love Him, not this world. Quit making choices of loving the world over God. Get back in fellowship with Him. So as we stand this morning, we prepare for this invitation. This is your opportunity right now to love God. Because right now He is talking to your heart. And He's saying you need to make a decision about your life. You're loving God, you're loving the world more than you're loving me. And I need you to make a decision right here and now to begin to love me. A conscious decision. I know that these things are so tempting and appealing to the eyes and to the touch. We understand that. God understands that, but He says, you make that decision to love me anyway. And if you're here this morning and you don't know Christ, right now I believe without a shadow of a doubt He's talking to your heart. There's something inside of you that is telling you that you need to come and be saved. You may not understand what exactly that is, but He's wanting you to make a decision. So during this invitation, we need to make some decisions. And I hope that decision is that I have decided to follow Jesus. So let's sing together. And come if God is speaking to your heart this morning.
Number 566. 5.